Welcome to Business Second Opinion. I'm Carol Sanford.
And I'm Zach Swartout.
The purpose of this podcast is to explore designs and practices in business, to understand from where they are sourced, usually unexamined, like who comes up with these ideas anyway and how do they get there? As well as we look at the effects of work designs and practices, and we focus on the outcomes that they produce and the consequences they produce, no matter what they promise. We look at the myths embedded in many of these practices and what to do instead based on if you were sourcing from a different place and if you were pursuing different effects. There may be many surprises for you and even a few shocks.
This is the fourth and final in our series looking at work design, the future, and the past of it, and how to create a workplace that serves workers, the business, and the reason for the work, which really is customers and our stakeholders. Our first three in the series looked at the history of work design over centuries, and then specifically and more closely at the much lauded shortfalls of holacracy. Today, we're focusing on structures designed to get work done. We lay out five criteria to examine work design and use them to examine holacracy. We also give you some examples of a developmental way of looking at work through the five criteria. We believe the five criteria provide a framework for examining the present and future of work. But what gives us the credibility to do this? The Carol Sanford Institute has designed and redesigned businesses and workplaces for over four decades in a co-creative process with CEOs from global Fortune 500 companies, as well as fast-growing entrepreneurial businesses. CSI even built systems very similar to Holacracy over 35 years ago and learned the errors firsthand. Carol understands the world of work differently and is able to see things others miss because they don't have frameworks and a developmental philosophy required to be guided in discerning how and how well they work. We also have hundreds of case stories to share. If you want to learn more, you can always head over to our website, carolsanfordinstitute.com, and pick up a copy of Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business. You always get a contrarian view at Business Second Opinion, but we can tell you why we think it needs that second opinion. Carol, get us started in how you think critically about work designs we see today.
Thanks, Zach. You know, I was thinking that it would be helpful to give people an image of what it's like to walk through a business. And today I'm going to use particularly a production experience because it's very grounded. Like if you were to walk into Colgate-Palmolive in Salford, England, where one of these systems is at work, you would not know what to make of it because there's no one clearly who's supervising, even though you've been told before you go in that no one flattened that organization. And if you stayed, you would notice that there are short meetings at the end of every shift where people are handing off things to one another, crossing over. So anything that happened during the day, people know about it if they're picking up for them. You would see a big surprise because you would see groups in meeting rooms where what they're doing is really working on the performance improvement of one of their distributors of Colgate products. Let's say, for example, one of those might be mom and pop stores, which are on every corner in the continent, and this facility serves them all. It might take a moment to understand what's going on here because you're trying to figure out who are the bosses, and it's not possible. People clearly come from every level and every function and are talking about business decisions for the whole of the business. They're maybe engaging with reports and they're working with detailed considerations that have been brought in by members of this team that are telling them about those mom and pop customers and what they think needs to happen to improve the corner store. Now, these are not outside people. These are members of the team who are doing this research. They know these customers. Then suddenly you watch a decision get made to expend a significant amount of energy to make an inventory improvement for either a group of or maybe all mom and pop grocery stores. You might even scrunch up your face and scratch your head because you think, wait, isn't that the work that marketing and sales do? And wait, does anybody usually do that? Do we look at what goes inside of the customer's shop? Even stranger, if you follow these members back to where their operations are, like some of them are running a line, some are coding sophisticated management automated processes, you would find that within 24 hours, everyone in that group knows about the new initiative, how it was decided, and they would have understood what their own role is going to be. No multiple coordination of events. It happens that fast. You might even interview a few people who seem to be helping these operational teams improve, helping people work together, make decisions together while they work, and even technical education that may be going on, where normally you'd expect an engineering team to come in. If you were to ask them what they were doing, they would say to you, we are resources. Resources to developing people where we used to be directing people. So this is a role change from what supervisors used to do to what they do now. Resource means to return people to themselves as the source, and that's what they consider their job. They get to grow people now rather than evaluate and manipulate them toward the organization's ends. The stress level is unbelievably low and the fulfillment is very high. You might ask, why didn't they just lay off these people or give them a chance to be bought out or to assimilate, just merge into a team? Well, I'm sure one of those newly designated resources would smile at you and exclaim, well, they would have lost my expertise and experience. Now, why would you want to do that? So there's an image that has you look at what we're talking about that work systems might begin to look like and do in some places.
So Carol, I can already see some of the difference from Holacracy just from that story. People get laid off or asked to assimilate all in the name of removing hierarchy. So one class one error is starting with the assumption that because hierarchies cause so many problems, which we all agree they got to go. So that's where you have to start. Is that a way of framing one of the errors?
Well, there are many class one errors, and certainly I don't think that flattening hierarchies actually gets rid of any of the things we think that we get rid of when we start. We need to explore a few things. Before we go in and look at exactly how Holacracy and the process I just explained fit together, let me share a framework with you for assessing work design. You can't just evaluate because we evaluate with the ideas we got in our head. We have to have some kind of framework so we can look at any current work design or there are going to be people bringing you new ideas about how to create order like we are doing today, or you might even be going to custom design or create a bespoke one that is so unique to you that it's not even customized. I'm going to offer 5 criteria that we use to help folks assess whether or not the work system that they're looking at, whether they have or are considering, will really produce and have them be able to determine what they'll produce in advance before they built it and see all the shortfalls. So the first criteria, everyone in the organization is connected directly to real customers and consumers, or some of both, and to be able to initiate endeavors for their customers' benefit, including the evolution of the business or the lives of that customer. Now, that's like what I was sharing with you about that team that was figuring out what they were going to do with the mom and pop stores. And everyone has that kind of level of connection and a connection back into the organization. The second one is that everyone's work is tied to an overarching strategy of the business. And they can tell you if you walk up to them how it fits with the overarching strategy of the business, what the business is doing to move toward that, and how they fit into it. They will understand how we're working, how the business is working on becoming non-displaceable in its marketplace, and how their particular work is benefiting that. This criteria in particular means that everyone is working on what is currently the work, but they're also designing, evolving what the work is that's coming. That's a hugely important thing. They're doing 2 kinds of work, at least 2, at one time. They're getting the work done and they're looking at where the work is going, and particularly based on looking at where the customer's life is. They're looking at what the customer is becoming. So first, everyone's connected directly to the market. Secondly, they're looking at their specific work strategically. The third one is that all structures, systems, and processes that are designed for people to work within, that's HR processes, technical processes, they must develop innate human capabilities. And these innate human capabilities are usually not considered to be a part of a business and organizational's work. They don't consider themselves responsible, maybe training, but not developing humans' ability to exercise these innate capabilities. This gets pointed out quite a bit in the book, but let me mention these 3 really quickly that are core to it. First, the ability to exercise personal agency, to get up, go do stuff, create initiative, make things happen. Secondly, what we call external considering, which is considering more than myself. In fact, increasingly considering Earth, communities in a much broader place, including the communities that they work in and caring for all beings. And third, this innate capability of having internal locus of control and responsibility for all the effects I create and responses around me. Now, can you imagine having an organization where all of those 3 were at play, but we don't develop them? We just try and hire people who already have it. But in our culture, they're not very well developed. So we make that a part of every work design, how it is you can build that capacity. The fourth one is that work itself requires people to pursue a better working society by the way it's structured, particularly democracy, which we all can appreciate right now. It works with how people are developed and engaged to think and work that makes democracy work better when they leave the workplace and they go out into their communities. We normally don't think of that as businesses work either. But if you think for a moment, much of what business does now is undermine the working of democracy, where people are not developed to think for themselves, but are used to taking orders and accepting others' opinions unquestioned. The fifth and last criteria for today, anyway, is people are responsible in their work to consider how to evolve the potential for wealth and well-being for all stakeholders in the business. Now, what do I mean by wealth and well-being? Well, one way to describe it is everybody is healthy. They're vitalized. They have vitality. They're viable. They can function and make their lives work. And they're able to evolve their contribution. And we're talking about being able to do that for buyers and users of your products, the co-creators like suppliers and employees, Earth that we all live on and depend on and hopefully contribute and give back to, the communities we live in, and the investors who underwrite us and help us grow and launch things. It's not just about getting our tasks done or making our customers happy. It's much more, and these five criteria give you a sense of that. And if you want to see more details and the case stories that go with that, again, the regenerative business has a lot of detail on this. That gives us a start, Zach.
Okay, that's great. So now let's take that structure. Let's take those criteria and then look at the structure of Holacracy as a way to understand these five criteria and whether this system, this work system, is actually able to pursue them. So Holacracy has specific structures used to organize work and they're in how the work is designed. The names for them are circles, cabals, roles, and lead links, all guided by colleague agreements and a constitution for the whole. Circles connect workers to one another without interference from outside supervision based on defined work that existed before the change. So individuals form circles as a change is called for, and then they disband once they achieve it, essentially. One person can be in many circles and be engaged in lots of coordination events, as has been pointed out by most of the examinations of Holacracy. And they organize around functions and divide roles, sometimes voting on who has which accountability. On the other hand, a cabal is a goal-oriented group that forms organically. Any individual can initiate a cabal that people can join just because they want to be a part of it. This is very similar to a project team when a new and exciting offer is on order. People can join if it calls to them. In a sense, they vote with their feet, which is the rallying cry. It has a flavor of what W.R. Gore, the makers of Gore-Tex, used for Gore, but Gore really had a well-defined strategy and a very clear market defined for focus. Roles are spread across the circle organization. People may play multiple roles as they can be achieved in several circles and change roles as the need arises. So Carol, let's use your five criteria given this example and let's start to take a look here.
Okay, well, let me start with telling you first, and again, this is giving you a more in-depth picture of the story I started with Colgate. So instead of, again, leaping to compare it to Holacracy, partly I want people to be able to make that assessment for themselves. So I'm going to show you more about how CSI works with businesses in a particular field over in what we've done almost 60 years. Although the founder says in Holacracy that they are the first new thing, they're just the most recent thing and not the most widely adopted in spite of their claims. They just may have a louder horn right now. We have hundreds of businesses on every continent who have worked with a developmental way of working, which might be what we could call what we do. We have three soft structures and don't tie any of them to flattening a hierarchy. I tried that. It's not the best way to work. It's the wrong focus. Changing the way people work radically evolves away from the challenges embedded in hierarchy just by having these new soft structures. In other words, we don't restructure work and don't restructure people's reporting relationships, but we set up three ways of working that are really important and they're not redundant and don't require coordination. So the first thing that we set up is a core team, which reflects the organization as a whole, not represents. It's not a voting thing. It's people who come from all functions and levels, and they have responsibility for the business as a whole. In some sense, it's like when I was growing up and we used to ride the boundaries of the ranch that I lived on, and we had responsibility for everything working if anything was going to get in that shouldn't be in there or get out that we wanted to keep inside. They're really paying attention to creating this core team, this overarching strategic thinking based on tending to what's happening in this dynamic market, remember, outside the fences, and also ensuring the non-displaceability of the business in that changing world. Now, that's a pretty big charter. And this team rotates a bit over time, but it has a lot of constancy for set periods of time. The message of the core team become, as you could see in my story, quickly dispersed out into the organization since they go back into their roles across the whole. So there's no coordination needed after the meeting because it spreads organically, but also in a structured way. Each team then returns to working on embedding this strategic direction into their own work. And these teams are leading their own work. The second soft structure you heard me reference actually in the Colgate story are what we call market field teams. Everyone in the organization is a part of one of these by choice. Rarely have I seen people be a part of two. So their energy isn't scattered. They become experts in one particular market field team, like the mom and pop distributors. And they're responsible for these particular markets and the set of customers in them. They think about how the strategy of the business applies to that market node. That's what we call them, not segments, since that makes it all demographics and that's artificial. Instead, work on what the shared values are, maybe the shared challenges. These market field teams track the industry and the lives of the customers and consumers in their market. They develop innovations for these markets. Again, all of this understanding travels quickly back into the natural work teams where the work is being done. There's also a bit of rotating every few months in who's leading the operational work they go back to. And they're coordinating with the leaders of a work team, not supervisors and not leads. There are no leads because the team is actually leading themselves, but based on a rotating structure. They are literally seeing themselves as outsourcing strategy. This is the market field team again. They're seeing themselves outsourcing strategy for their market and their primary customers or market set that they're working on. Now, that's a strange idea. We normally think of satisfying the needs of the customer. Nope. The market field, now that's the operational teams, but the market field team is really seeing themselves as the strategist and as the research and development team for that market group. So the reason I gave the example of the mom and pop stores coming up with improvement in the point of sale for them was this is the place they saw as the primary restraint. And the minute they could see it as a restraint for their customers, they worked on it. They are externally focused. They determine the work and everyone in the organization is a member of a team that is keeping that external focus. And again, one team, not many teams. It develops the mind of each person there to think like a CEO and to act like one. So coming out of this role of the market field team, the third thing arises, or sometimes it comes out of their natural work team that they go back to. Each person is responsible for developing initiatives which they are working on. They gain alignment with their market field team, with their natural work team. But these particular things that they develop are ways that they want to push themselves to contribute something into the market, to do it for the business and align with the strategy. They may be working on something that is ecologically more focused and a way they believe that Earth becomes healthier. Some of their pursuits, like this one that I spoke about, the market field team, that had some specific subsets of people who were working on helping produce that. And it was going to take them quite a long time to do it, even some additional education. But that's acceptable. The market field team can lead that. They want everybody growing beyond what they can currently do. Others may pick up and join, which was the case of this market field team. One person initiated and then others jumped on board. But it's not just randomly generated. It's within the work of strategy that's happening in the market field team in the context of the overarching strategy. The people do have to learn to and build support from others to cover for them, to get resources for them. They always develop external measures that are tied to the overall business strategy, the return to all the stakeholders, and to the financial return. They have to be able to calculate earnings margins and cash flow return. It has something to do with always going beyond what is just ask of the customer and ask of them. It has to require them to have to grow beyond what they normally had to do. That's why we call them promises beyond ableness. And they have to be able to make a specific difference while making sure they're really still fitting within the strategy. And they have the work, the two teams they're on, the one where they deliver their work, whatever function that is, and their market field team. Every one of these has a part of this as their work description, and they can tell when they're complete, when it's done, because it's clearly in a plan, and then they pick a new one. So you have the core team, the market field team, and these individual initiatives, which they then become group initiatives. None of this is assigned to a person because you're working on personal agency, as we said, one of the innate human capabilities to be developed. Now, that may have sounded like a lot of work, but if you go look at the number of activities that Holacracy and even regular traditional organizations take in coordination, this one we found takes about one third of the amount of time it took to do goal setting, performance reviews, all the other human resource programs set up like feedback, the Holacracy groups of coordinating probably even takes less time than those. But it is a way of people knowing what they're affecting and how it is that they're actually developing human beings in the process. So I hope you can see here that the big key is this external focus. I'm trying to emphasize that over and over again, bounded by the strategic direction, focused by the market field teams. They're not tied exactly to a function. The teams aren't. They're all cross-functional. They have to think as business people in order to do this. So that the thing about meeting customer needs is the narrow window you look in is you don't actually have to be a business person to do that, because there are specific defined things you can check off and you can get those done. And still, it might not have been what the business was calling for. So in order to really build a bigger thinking capability and a capability that can work on a whole business system, that's why all these teams are structured to be very externally focused. So I said earlier, I think we create this with building the mind of the CEO, and the core team and the market team are involved continuously in the development of thinking capability, which is what really builds agility and creativity, not a program set up with how people are supposed to work. Take a breath here. I think it's important to say just a slight bit more before we move into looking more at Holacracy. We don't get rid of supervisors and managers. I did that, as I said, and it's not nearly as powerful as when it's done as giving them more powerful roles. I always say if you're going to change something, everybody should get more out of it, not less. No one ever left out of any of these organizations. I can't say no one, but certainly no one was asked to. And it was a very small number, one or two, even in the Colgate example I gave, because they all become resources to these teams, to the core team, to the market field team, to operating and functional teams, and even to individuals as they pick their promise beyond ableness. They're not on any of these functional teams or any of the core teams or market teams, but they are evaluated by how well they ensure those teams work, how well they deliver. They're helping groups of individuals define and develop their contribution, and they do it usually within the work practices that they're already doing. They help them learn how to assess their own progress and success using great instruments that they develop, and some of which we support them having frameworks to develop. They all learn how earnings, margins, and cash flow get produced, less interested in how they count it, but that is a part of the team too, and how other stakeholders benefit. In other words, it's wealth for all. So that gives you ideas, Zach. That was a mouthful of the way those criteria play out and the way we work. Thanks for asking.
I want to take a moment to share with you that we are sponsored by the Regenerative Business Development Community, where small and mid-sized businesses meet to learn more about our regenerative way of doing business. Check out the community on carolsanfordinstitute.com under offerings. Join businesses from industries from food to technology to entertainment. Meet on Zoom and share your own discoveries and hear how others are moving forward. There are many other differences from the Holacracy model. One of the major reasons is that each stems from a different metaphor. Holacracy is based on the metaphor of organizations as a computer operating system, as in software development, with apps added on to manage new needs as they show up. The regenerative system, however, is based on living systems, which build capability to work organically for the good of the entire system, including the industry, earth, and society. They are externally facing, conscious of the world they live in, and working to keep evolving it and ourselves in it. Living systems don't ask people to leave because they are about to change. They know that everyone can grow and change with development, but the will to participate only happens if there is value for each individual and what they contribute, coupled with an opportunity to be developed and make a unique difference. We don't have time to talk about how the business, what they need to put in place in terms of the infrastructure for this work. But luckily, that's introduced a lot in detail of Carol's book, The Regenerative Business, with about 15 case stories about how people do this. There are several things I want to call attention to, though, from what CSI does now, plus from all the readings I've done about Holacracy. So Holacracy doesn't speak much about customers, except to keep them happy with great customer service, which by extension is meant to make employees happier. That's a pretty narrow and close-in view focused on needs. it pretty much assumes that we will be doing the same thing with the same people for the indefinite future, or a special team will come up with the next strategies and direction. The articles and books on holacracy talk primarily about the work itself while defining structures that are designed for getting the work done. None of the definitions has a defined responsibility to create success for the customer or other stakeholders. It's a very internally focused and present existence focused model. We want work design to be more externally focused, as Carol has talked about before, and building what is needed for the future within work teams, not in separate functions. It almost seems as if all they care about is getting rid of managers and therefore the hierarchy, not how it moves the business. Secondly, strategy is done by others, and the actual teams are not connected on a day-to-day basis with the direction, pursuits, and product development. That's others' work. So the second criteria is not met. We want strategic thinking to be integrated into the work and how it gets done, for the new direction to be part of everyone's job. The arising and demise of such teams leaves them unable to build an evolutionary growth path for themselves and the customers over time. Of course, if you're using a project mind, which is a software idea, then this is not seen as necessary. It not only causes a lot of meetings to happen to coordinate across individuals, but without any mention or ties to evolving outcomes for customers for their own better future. So, Carol, what did I miss here?
Well, I think you got the big highlights. I would add maybe that when self-management is defined as being about the work itself, like people can manage themselves in doing the work, individuals and small peer groups become the arbitrators of what is right. They're likely also in that context to be very powerful voices, people who have big skills at persuasion. And there's no requirement for innovation that I can see for the customer. Now, they would say they're after improvement and they have teams which go set up innovation, but I believe that needs to be embedded. And of course, one of the big critiques that's happened of holacracy is it's really not stakeholder-based. Like the people who are taking on these self-managing roles are not thinking about the responsibility they have to community, society, and planet. So when you define self-managing as an internal process of managing one's own thinking, which is what we do, and doing that with a manage your own state of being and a sense of responsibility and contribution to the external world which we serve, it becomes irrelevant in some ways what the outside structure looks like, but it also makes it unnecessary to have overseers without any particular change in titles. Let me say that another way. You don't really have to change the structure in order to be able to change what happens. You change how people are thinking and the opportunities for them to contribute. Roles that get changed profoundly, like the ones we're talking about, where supervisors are no longer giving direction, but they're now giving development, those resources, and I don't call them coaches, but they're really helping evolve work in the way work is done. Particularly as supervisors are supporting promises beyond ableness and helping their plans be successful, those people who were in supervision role drop off caring about their responsibility for that person, except as they have capability, not holding them accountable, but helping them know how to hold themselves accountable. These resources, previously supervisors, are also supporting these core teams and field teams with business expertise. They're learning to make decisions that support individuals becoming, I guess you'd say, involved in their own self-discovery and their own contribution. So we're really working to build this reflection process that's happened inside of people, not having people be taking on directing others and having to get rid of them in order to get rid of that. It's really building the capability to be self-directed and defining their own essence expression. One last thing I might add is one aspect of the development process is people learning that there need to be no levels of power over others, but there are different levels of work, even if not levels of people. And I think sometimes that gets lost when we flatten hierarchies. That's what the developmental sessions that we do with all of these organizations focus on, developing people to move from managing people to the development of people. And the framework which they're working in teaches them to be paying attention to the work that they're doing, how the work is getting done, how they can improve and evolve the work, and how it makes a difference and connects to the people who are being served by it. With each promise being at a more complex level. So if you're making a promise beyond ableness, you're asking them to understand more. And the next level, they make a more complex promise for their customer. And of course, now there's bigger potential being realized. I think the thing I'm trying to look at is that people have mixed up the idea of hierarchies with people rather than hierarchies of work and ability to think at a more complex level. Flattening people often gets rid of the people who were thinking of a more encompassing way and a more complex way. And they're then not helping people learn to cross those boundaries and levels of difficulty with what they take on. What I'm talking about, of course, with what we do at CSI is we're moving way beyond not only a traditional organization or a holacracy, but we're talking about significant infrastructure, which is just simply more powerful than trying to get rid of the hierarchy. The work structures in work design and holacracy are neither dimensional or complex enough. So their new structure complicates work in the intention of simplifying it. What we're really trying to do is increase the ability of people to manage complexity and to essentialize what they're doing by building their capability in their own mind and building the capability of supervisors now to help them grow and learn, not to build structures so that you can change what the hierarchy looks like, but to instead change how the mind works and what it's able to do. That is, moving to connecting externally by having my own internal thinking shift.
Sign up for our newsletter or RSS feed so you know when our next podcast is getting released. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform and please add a review. It helps us to find and engage. Also, be sure to check out our show notes on Business Second Opinion blog, or you can download our free paper on discernment on our website, businesssecondopinion.com. Also, don't forget to visit Business Second Opinion on SurveyMonkey to recommend subjects we tackle in the world of business. Point to a particular business journal on which you want a Business Second Opinion. This has been Business Second Opinion.